Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Kiss, Destroyer.
Oh.
Cool. Okay.
You know, somewhat familiar with the album, but not necessarily familiar with all the tracks on the album.
I think this was sort of their breakthrough album. As far as I know, like, their first couple albums didn't really sell well. They were doing really well live, but it wasn't until like the live album Alive came out and the goal for this album, I think, was to sort of replicate their live sound. But anyway, this is what it says on allmusic.com. The pressure was on Kiss for their fifth release, and the band knew it. Their breakthrough, Alive, was going to be hard to top, so instead of trying to recreate a concert setting in the studio, they went the opposite route. Destroyer is one of Kiss's most experimental studio albums, but also one of their strongest and most interesting. Alice Cooper and Pink Floyd producer Bob Ezrin was on hand, and he strongly encouraged the band to experiment. There's extensive use of sound effects, the album's untitled closing track, and the appearance of a boys' choir in Great Expectations and an orchestra-laden, heartfelt ballad with Beth. But there's plenty of Kiss's heavy thunder rock to go around, such as the demonic God of Thunder and the sing-along anthems Flaming Youth, Shout It Out Loud, and King of the Nighttime World, and Detroit Rock City. The latter, a tale of a doomed concertgoer complete with violent car crash sound effects. But it was the aforementioned Peter Criss ballad Beth that made Destroyer such a success. The song was a surprise top 10 hit. It was originally released as a B-side to Detroit Rock City. Also included is a song that Nirvana would later cover, called Do You Love Me, as well as an ode to the pleasures of S&M, Sweet Pain. Destroyer also marked the first time that a comic book illustration of the band appeared on the cover, confirming that the band was transforming from hard rockers to superheroes.
All right.
I think this is pretty much regarded as their, like, definitive their best album. Yeah. So this is, it was released on March 15th, 1976. Recorded at Electric Lady and Record Plant in New York City. Genres are hard rock, heavy metal. Was released on Casablanca Records and produced by Bob Ezrin. So Yeah, it's six and... Well, no, actually. Side one is the first four songs, and then side two is six songs.
Okay, so the... I see. Yeah, the other two are...
They're bonus tracks.
Bonus tracks.
So it's...
Gotcha.
The last song is Rock and Roll Party. So, yeah, so if you're listening along... side one will start with Detroit Rock City and end with Great Expectations. So if you want to pause and stop in the at that point, at the midway point, and discuss the album. But without further ado, let's get into the album. Here is the first song, Detroit Rock City. All right, ending side one with Great Expectations. That was a strange song.
Yeah, that last one was definitely a little strange. Yeah, it started off, Detroit Rock City, pretty decent song, actually. I've never been the biggest Kiss fan, but it's a pretty good song. King of the Nighttime World got, okay, more, this is sort of what I would expect from them. God of Thunder, again, it got a little dumber. And then Great Expectations was, what was that?
Yeah, it was like a show tune. The lyrics were weird. And yeah, I don't know. I actually do like God of Thunder. I always did like that song.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like I said, it's a little dumb, but it's okay. It's a Kiss song.
Yeah. that's sort of Gene Simmons' theme song, I guess.
Right, okay.
Or sort of his signature. And that's like in the part in the show where he does like the blood coming out of his mouth and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Great Expectations. Like, it started off okay. Like, it started off, but then when it went to the chorus, it just kind of fell off. Like, I was expecting, like, a lift and it to be a little catchier or something, yeah. But it just kind of...
It sounded like they were taking a page out of, like, the Rolling Stones, like, Can't Always Get What You Want book, but yeah. Didn't... execute it nearly as well.
Yeah, and there were like these like bells and xylophones going on, and it felt like a show tune or something. Like it's not,
which would have been sort of fine, except it just wasn't executed that well.
Exactly. Yeah, it just felt like, well, it's just like any idea they had, they decided to record it, and nobody said, "Hey, maybe we should not." Put that on, or maybe we should, like, it feels like a song, like it has some potential, but it feels like they just kind of gave up on it halfway and they just doesn't feel like it should be on the album. Like it feels unfinished.
Yeah, it does seem a little out of place. Again, they were experimenting and I can sort of respect them for that, but yeah, it just seemed a little phoned in a bit, that one.
Yeah, the lyrics were kind of stupid.
I mean, it's obviously about the women that kind of throw themselves at them. So they sort of wrote a song about that. But yeah, it's a little...
I feel like they could have been a little more poetic writing about that.
You can see what my hands can do, and you wish that you were the one I was doing it to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, that's something like a 15-year-old would write.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'd only ever heard the single version of Detroit Rock City.
Oh, yeah.
And
I never
heard any of the cinematic, like, sound effects or, like, that intro and, like the sound effects that went throughout it. I'd never heard that version before.
I think I have, but again, it would have been might have been on the radio, but occasionally the radio would play the album version.
And it's actually, it's a true story. It's
sort of based on a true story.
Based on a true story. A kid was driving to a Kiss concert and died in a car crash. And it was in the news and they heard about it and they decided to write a song about it. But yeah, I'd never heard, I thought it was cool the way they sort of set up the album in sort of more, and I guess Kiss is a very visual sort of cinematic band, so it makes sense to do something like that. So I thought that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty good song, and the album version is actually quite good.
So, yeah, yeah.
They're sort of taking a page out of like the Pink Floyd thing and actually executing it well.
Well, that, and I think that's the producer Bob Ezrin. He produced The Wall, so you know, of course, you know.
Anyway,
let's move on to the second side of the album, and it starts off with the song "Flaming Youth." So here we go. All right, ending the album there with sort of sound effect thing with called Rock and Roll Party. Really, the last song was Do You Love Me, but... okay, so what I'm getting from this is Paul Stanley is a better songwriter than Gene Simmons.
Okay. Yeah.
What, Sweet Pain? Like, what? What?
Yeah, it's about BDSM. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, this album is okay. It's there's some good songs on it. It's kind of hit and miss, though.
The end of the album, the last few tracks are excellent tracks. You got Just Shout It Out Loud, Beth, and even Do You Love Me is pretty good. It's not bad.
Yeah, I always really liked Shout It Out Loud. I always thought that was a really good song. Yeah, I guess Kiss are really more known for their live show than, you know, really good studio stuff. They brought in Bob Ezrin, who at the time was more well-known for recording Alice Cooper and making, I think, Welcome to My Nightmare was the breakout album there. And so the first three Kiss albums are very dry, like, you know, that dry 70s sound, that like
early 70s sound,
yeah. No reverb at all. Yeah. And like that's what those albums sound like. And I like that sound, but that's the wrong sound for Kiss.
They needed that reverb on them because they're very lively band.
Yeah.
Yeah, a dead sound wouldn't... Yeah, it would just what doesn't work. Yes, I think sound-wise, yeah, this album is definitely very well produced. I thought, like, the musicianship is pretty good. The guitar playing's really good, and there's nothing wrong. Actually, there's some really cool bass lines in it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've heard, you know, just did various interviews and stuff with different members of the band, and they say that this album was like Bob Ezrin really, really pushed them to like get everything perfect. Like they would do take after take after take after take, and you know, it kind of drove them nuts, but that's what they needed. They needed to be whipped into shape, you know, and you know, you can tell. I mean, like, just like the drums on Detroit Rock City, I don't think they would have come up with something like that earlier, or like the bass line on Shout It Out Loud. I don't think they would have come up with that on their own. They needed needed a producer to. And I was a little bit wrong in that they were trying to replicate the live sound of the Alive album. This is not really a live, like, this is an album. This is a record. It's you know, put together. It's not just off the cuff. It's really planned out, and it's a great sounding album. And you can tell that they you know, on some of the later albums, what they would do is, I think maybe the one that came out in 79, I think it's called Dynasty. They, even though all the members of Kiss were credited on the album, I think at least Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley played on everything, but I think the drums were done by a different guy. I think Anton Fig is his name. He's a studio drummer. And so, but here, all the members are playing everything. There are lots of personal problems within the band, of course, but...
That's never ended.
But, you know, this album is proof that the... And that's just Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons wanting to have complete control over everything. But I mean, this album is proof that, that Ace Frehley and Peter Criss can do it. Like, they're not incapable of playing. They may need some guidance, but they're not incapable of, you know...
Well, I've always known that Ace Frehley was a really good guitarist.
He is an amazing guitarist.
Yeah.
He's got such a unique style. You kind of always know when it's him. He's got this, like, he always does that little, like, that little Chuck Berry thing, like the two-string thing, and he's really actually an underrated as a guitar player, I think. I don't think he gets enough credit for being, you know, because the image of Kiss is so, you know.
The image of Kiss can be a detriment, I honestly think, to the band, oddly enough. I mean, it made them a lot of money to a certain demographic, but to be taken seriously amongst, like, you know, real musicians, some musicians have looked past it, but a lot can't. And I think it actually has hurt them in a way. And, you know, songs like Sweet Pain and Great Expectations didn't help that either. But, you know, but yeah, the musicianship is there, and there's actually a lot of talent in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, say what you want about Gene Simmons, but he is a good bass player.
He really is, yeah. Some of the bass, like, I was, listening, like, Shout It Out Loud, there's, like, the bass line after the chorus that's doubled on the piano, but, like that's a really clever bass line, and he knows what he's doing. There was a story about... there was the story of how Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons met, and Gene played some songs that he had written for Paul, and, like, they were just terrible. Like, something about... I can't remember some of the titles, but one of them was about, like...
Lick My Love Pump.
Oh. No, it was even stupider than that. It was like, My Uncle is a Fisherman or something like that. It was just really...
Okay.
Really weird. Yeah, it was odd. But, and I was just reading the credits on this album. Actually, God of Thunder was actually written by Paul Stanley. And with the... I thought it was Gene Simmons, but no, it's Paul Stanley writing a better song. So I guess the story is they wanted Bob Ezrin... Like, Paul Stanley was going to record it, and it was a little faster, but they decided, well, let's slow the tempo down a little bit and give it to Gene, because I think that would really work well. Even the big song that everyone associates with Gene Simmons wasn't actually written by him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the way it goes sometimes. Some people are just better songwriters than others, so...
Yeah. I think... So the question, I guess, yeah, would you listen to this again?
Not immediately. It's hard to say. I mean, to get a yes or no, there's enough good stuff on here that's probably worth another listen, but it probably won't happen immediately. That's honestly the best I can give.
I would say the same thing. There's some good songs on here. I probably wouldn't listen to the whole thing again.
Yeah, probably. There's, it might be worth, and even that, it's like, I don't know if I if I saw it somewhere, if I'd rather, if I'd really, you know, pick it up, knowing that there's some decent stuff on there. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. It's not really my thing, but there are some good songs on there. This, like, if it wound up in my collection one way or another, I probably wouldn't necessarily get rid of it because there's actually enough stuff on there. I probably wouldn't listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I'd be skipping tracks. You know, it's just the way it goes. If it's on cassette, wow, well, that's a lot of fast forwarding and stuff like that. But yeah, if it's on record, I can just lift the needle.
Yeah.
If it's on CD, you just press a button.
The skip button. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, there's... I wouldn't listen to the whole thing. You know, if the all the good songs are probably on a greatest hits compilation somewhere.
I think so.
Anyway,
I think, you know, Detroit Rock City and Shout It Out Loud and Beth are definitely on greatest hits album somewhere. So,
yeah. So there you have it. There's Kiss Destroyer. I guess that's going to do it. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, you can go to polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line and, you know, tell us how we're doing, say hello. And if you feel inclined, you can help us out. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You get lots of cool perks there. Like, you can pick an album for us to review, get a shout out at the end of these episodes.
Shout it out loud.
I knew you were going to do that. And, yeah, you can, there's some other things too. I can't remember. Oh, you get these episodes a week before they go out live.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's, gonna do it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.